Local news, local issues, local politics. It's Local Matters. Got something to say? Send us an email to localmatters@kbkw.com. Here's Johnny Manson.
All right, it's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, and on the phone with us this morning, we have Senator Jeff Wilson. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me on this morning.
Hopefully our phone line doesn't drop off, and if it does, I'll be extremely embarrassed. Okay. So, how's it going up in Ole?
Well, we are back in session. I won't necessarily say it's the session that maybe most people would be used to as far as functioning government. We're still very much somewhat locked down due to the COVID restrictions. So the campus is, it's very lonely. It's almost like a ghost town. There's very few people here from the public. There's certainly not many, if any, hardly any lobbyists or other than that. So it's a kind of a very few of us are actually in Olympia. So it's going, but again, we're still partially closed.
It's going. So where do we want to start? Do we want to start about the well thought out planned long term care tax issue? Do we want to talk about lying? Do we want to talk? Where should we go?
Well, we should go wherever we're probably going to need to get people the most riled up, because I don't think that there's many bills I'm able to talk about that won't get people riled up. So all of these greatest hits, we can start with whatever you'd like, sir.
Okay. How about this this long-term care tax? There's been a delay, right?
Yes, sir. There has been an 18-month delay, and it's amazing how fast-track that happened. In other words, when we started to discuss this long-term with short-term benefit health care, I call it, it's amazing how fast it got the attention once we got into session, and now it has the official 18-month timeout. But that wasn't the chosen path, necessarily. I'll offer up that one side of the aisle wants to desperately repair this, and the other side of the aisle really said, listen, this isn't much repairable. We made a mistake, and it's okay to do a do-over. Let's repeal this, and let's start over. Ultimately, the majority party has prevailed, and that bill is going to have an 18-month to figure out, I guess, to untangle the mess that it created.
So whose bright idea was this from the gate? Who said, you know what we should do? You know what people are telling me is they want this, and this is what we should do. Who started this?
Well, the bright idea may have probably came from a very dark and cloudy day before me, and I don't want to cast anybody under the bus. I was not a legislator in Olympia in 2019 when this really first gave birth, and ultimately it wound up last year, I believe, as a House Bill 1323, which was the grand scheme to create the one of a kind, the first of a kind. The Washington state is going to blaze the trail where no other state has gone before, and get into the long-term health care insurance business. And there's nothing really wrong with the intent. We do need to look at long-term health care and costs. I mean, it's a very valid concern. Getting older or getting to that point where you need that long-term care, it's expensive. But we blundered. This act, or this long-term, short-term benefit employee tax, turned out to be, well, it's probably going to be one of the most recent boondoggles we've done.
Yeah. And then by saying repair it, is that just admitting defeat by those who supported it before?
Well, and that's a very interesting way to put it, because financially, it was defeated just as soon as it was implemented. I mean, let's go through this a little bit. We come out with this really good idea. We're going to take the money from you. You're going to get only one time in your entire lifetime, only one time to opt out of this program, or forever till death do you part. In doing so, the state was clearly had to acknowledge the people. Over 500 and as many as 550,000, a half a million Washingtonians said, no way, and they opted out. This program was fiscally dead before it started. And in fact, with so many people opting out of a socially filled plan, you're technically already somewhat broke. You're going to have to raise the rate. However, raising the rate to charge you more for the premium, I haven't heard one person talk about, well, let's raise the benefit. So I think we're going to have to charge a lot more, but don't worry, we're not going to give you anything more for it except your $36,000 benefit, which we all know is incredibly short-term, not long-term health care.
Right, right. Now, you hear things like, you know, when the government gets involved in things like health care, things don't really run that efficiently. Others argue that and say, you know, look at this program, look at that program. I wouldn't expect you to know this, but you've heard the saying, like, you know, you go to a hospital or a, you know, medical facility and you get a Band-Aid and you're charged $50 for it. Why is it $50 when I can go to the store and get a whole box of Band-Aids for, you know, $2?
Absolutely. You're going to get into, there's a lot of keywords out there that legislators like to use, and it starts with greatest hits like affordable housing, affordable medical coverage, affordable medical services, and I will argue those days are kind of gone. We need to maybe pick some new words. We've done a number of good things to correct those, so what I would say for the customer service interaction with your health care. And there is legislation that has asked about no surprise billing and issues like that, so that people don't go to the hospital, for example, in the emergency department, and then come home and really get sick or ill once they get that humongous out-of-service or network hospital bill. I mean, it seems that hospital bills, in fact, and I don't mean to be too snarky, but come on, some hospital bills, in fact, can cause an injury all on their own to right. the patient. So, you know, it's something that we address. But, you know, medical care, medical services, thank you to the deliverance of the COVID virus, it has put health care at its taxing limits and tested our strains and our community patients. So it's an issue that is definitely going to continue to have a lot of attention in the spotlight.
So if you had a question for the senator here, you can email or text Johnny at kbkw.com. I have a question. Would you ask Senator Wilson if he supports inclusionary zoning? I've seen the issue on the Grace Harbor Commissioner's meeting agenda.
Inclusionary zoning. I'm going to have to ask for that definition.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to look that up, too.
I know. I mean, with zoning, we talk about building and planning, and we have ordinances and codes and that. So inclusionary, I need to know where does that apply for building and code and zoning implications.
Right, right. Maybe they'll, text me a follow-up here. So, okay.
Sure.
Another issue here. The Employment Security Department, I hear, has been kind of a mess, and people are like, hey, when can we get this fixed? You know, people who deserve the use of and who've been, you know, putting the time in, and when they need it, it's just a mess. What say you?
Well, the Employment Security Department is the winner, the grand prize winner. Employment Security Department is responsible for the largest theft in our state history. In other words, over $1.1 billion were erroneously paid out by Employment Security to bad actors, unscrupulous people. They were cheated. We were cheated. Out of $1.1 million was robbed from that Employment Security Bank, and that was under the leadership of then Director Susie Levine, who is no longer around to work in that department, as she was whisked off and was provided a new job with the Biden administration. That didn't fix the fraudulent $1.1 billion issue that we're still trying to reel from, but it got a lot worse. It got a lot worse at the Employment Security Department. Just when you think that the Nigerian fraud was something to make front page headlines, well, more recently, back in October, Governor Inslee's mandate also created another employment security issue. a lot of people were fired or told that they were going to be fired on or before October 18th in Washington State. State workers were told this by Governor Inslee. And a number of those people, in fact, ended up being fired for not taking the vaccination or for a number of other reasons. The bottom line is those people went over to an Employment Security Department and said, listen, I got fired from working for the state of Washington. I got no job. I'd like to apply for unemployment benefits, for which I'm here to tell you that most all of those individuals did not get that. So here you have hardworking Washingtonian citizens, a snow plow truck driver for Washington Department of Transportation. There was an instance of a gentleman working there for 26 years. He was fired on October 18th by the Governor Inslee's cruel mandate. And he thought he would go over and simply start the unemployment process that he paid into
right. All
those years.
Right.
And the answer was, sorry, sir, we can't help you. And I don't know how that sounds, but sorry, sir, we can't help you. But we certainly did very well in process all the Nigerian unemployment claims.
Oh, that was nice.
Yep, it's the truth.
You know, it seems like, you know, mistake after mistake, poor decision after poor decision, gaffe after gaffe. It's all under the same leadership. And people haven't figured it out yet. I don't know. It's 20 minutes after 7 o'clock. We have the good Senator Jeff Wilson on the line. If you have any questions for him, concerns, whatever, he's here to answer some questions. You can email or text johnny@kbkw.com. I have something in here. Let's see. Oh, a couple definitions for inclusionary zoning, also known as inclusionary housing, refers to municipal and county planning ordinances that require a given share of new construction to be affordable by people to low or moderate incomes. The term inclusionary zoning indicates that these ordinances seek to counter exclusionary zoning practices, which aim to exclude low-cost housing from zoning and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so...
Inclusionary zoning is part of what we've been doing and do religiously here in Olympia. I serve on the Senate Housing and Local Government, and we deal with issues of this all the time, issues to construct affordable housing and mid-size type housing. And we have taken a number of steps this year to ensure that we would open up existing developments and redevelopments for inclusion of those that have affordability needs that they must meet. For example, low income or very low income, but 30% technically of somebody's income seems to be the thrown out word of, well, what's affordable and what's to spend on housing. And there's one thing, it's easy to say a number like 30% is a cutoff, but these targets move. Nowadays, there's affordability seems to be an elusive issue at times because of the pandemic. Inflation. We've had the highest, and we're suffering from the highest inflation rates in 40 years.
Build back
so
better.
Things that are getting affordable are getting unaffordable.
Right, right. And we've had some callers even this morning because we've been talking about affordable housing, saying that, you know, if you build affordable housing, it will just bring low income housing to that area, not necessarily helping them. I want to try to say it the way they were saying it. I don't know if I accomplished that or not. So how about the Secretary of State? What's going to happen there? He was appointed, but then now does he have to go through a re-election process when it's time?
Absolutely. The Secretary of State's position was, of course, vacant for a brief moment when Secretary of State Kim Wyman was offered a job at the Biden administration. So Secretary Wyman got on an airplane and is working now in D.C. The void was filled by the appointment using Senator Steve Hobbs, appointed by Governor Inslee to fill this term. And you're right, Johnny, this is the year that the interim Secretary of State will have to file in May, just like anybody else running for the election, and going to have to duke it out and see who the winner is in November. So we have a current interim Secretary of State. We don't know if it'll be permanent. That's up to the voters.
I thought it was interesting, shifting gears here again. We had a ban on affirmative action where it was a ban on hiring based on sex or race, and the governor just lifted that ban, and the ban was like put in place. Well, the voters said this is what we want, and that was when Gary Locke was governor, and he didn't necessarily agree with it, but he said, you know what, I don't agree with this, but the people have spoken. So then our current governor just comes along and says, I'm just going to lift this. What's the kind of thought in Olympia on this?
Well, it's not a thought. It's a pattern. Governor Inslee is operating under emergency orders, and quite frankly, we see a number of mandates coming out. I don't know in any way if this mandate, or excuse me, the lifting of that issue is under the guise of emergency orders. It shouldn't be. But you're right. He just simply changed that. We've been through a lot of struggles at the legislature, starting with I-1000, I-2000. We've had a lot of issues. And diversion, inclusion, and equity is always a very important part of something that we must take serious and work through our communities. You know, however, we always need to make sure that we're providing the legislation that truly matters. And I got to tell you, when the people tell you one thing and you don't do it, I can derail this conversation in 1 second by saying $30 car tabs.
Right.
That's a prime example of the people tell us what they want. It's clearly demonstrated. We don't mind them. They still say they want what they want. They do it legally. They do it for the process. And Olympia turns its head away. And in the same case, I'll offer up that maybe this is, you know, happening on actions that the maybe the executive branch is doing right now. We didn't discuss ending that as a Senate or a House of Representatives. It's just like we didn't discuss the insurance commissioner throwing out credit scores and putting a lot of existing people with insurance to have their rates just immediately skyrocket.
Right.
In most cases. And it shows you that under the I'm going to offer that people may tend to get more emboldened and more aggressive, or may just do things that may not normally done under the cloak and cover of this COVID-19 virus.
Right, right. Never let a good tragedy go to waste.
I can concur with that, sir.
And then didn't he, I don't know if it was an executive order, but he kind of sandwiched this thing in where you can hire companies, and maybe it was just the state, can hire companies based on sex or race or veteran-owned businesses, and kind of sandwiched vet-owned. I don't know anybody that would simply not hire a vet-owned business if they were qualified, just and wouldn't hire them because they were a vet-owned business. So he kind of sandwiched this. So if you're against this, then you must be against the vets, too. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Well, I think overall the attitude is getting to the point where we do need to make, there's a lot of strides and gaps that we need to fill, and we get into things like equity and inclusion, and these are very important, and I'll offer up to your listeners right off the bat, before we get too much into that, everybody needs to be aware the 14th Amendment of the United States is always there.
Right.
And for that reason, you know, we need to take things, study things carefully, but it appears now that, you know, that we have issues that have come before us, and they seem to be issues ranging from critical race theory all the way to, like you say, getting rid of things like you had mentioned affirmative action, those type things. And that's a little bit concerning because we have so many voices to consider.
All right, it's 7:35, and we have Senator Jeff Wilson on the horn with us. If you have any questions for him, you can email or text johnny@kbkw.com. And actually, this whole emergency powers thing going on in Olli. How's it looking? I mean, are we going to have a say, or is the legislature or anybody going to have a say into how long a governor can have emergency powers and things like that?
Wow. Well, Johnny, we're talking about a very old question. And the question is, for 700 and what, approaching 10 days, Washington State has been under the emergency powers directives of one person. And so emergency powers seems to be in need of some checks and balances. And what happened was last year during our long session, the Republican Senator Linda Wilson and I co-sponsored a bill called 5039. It dealt with the emergency powers. It basically said, wait a minute, there's got to be a way where the legislature could, in fact, take on an emergency order from a governor. Not necessarily taking on the governor. And what I need to do is to make very clear on this disclaimer, this is not an attack on the governor, but let's think about this. Going forward, regardless of who your governor is, man, woman, Republican, Democrat, that is irrelevant. What should matter is we need that balance of power. And clearly for almost, well, getting 2 years, we've had one person in Washington State at the helm, and that I'll offer up that is wrong. So we were shut out last year. The other side of the aisle refused to even hear emergency power reform, and I know that because I'm the ranking member on state government and elections. It came through the committee that I work on. So the answer was no, and this year the answer was going to be no. But just last week, out of the blue, the Democrats dropped a bill called Senate Bill 5909 to address governor emergency reform powers. And I want the world to know I am grateful that the Democrats, the majority party, finally, after almost 2 years, finally provided the opportunity to at least discuss how our one governor rule is going to continue on, or how the next governor would be held to be accountable for.
Right.
So that bill miraculously shows up, it gets a hearing, it even gets voted on, and it's on its way possibly heading to the floor. I don't know if it's going to make it to the floor, but the bill that was put out by the other side of the aisle on emergency powers, I'm going to offer up respectfully that the bill doesn't solve any problems. In fact, I'll offer up the bill is lacking any teeth. It almost makes it virtually impossible to call a governor in. So I'm going to offer up that the new proposed bill, I'm definitely cannot support it. I support emergency reform. I think everybody does. But this bill proposed essentially ties our hands and doesn't do anything. Johnny, we set state records last Friday in Olympia. 5,600 people signed up to discuss emergency powers. 178 of those people even asked to speak on the topic in my committee meeting last week. Although out of 170 people trying desperately to speak, we could only give just a handful, eight or nine human beings, 60 seconds to tell us their story of how they feel about being under one-person rule for 2 years. This is a problem we need to address, and it needs to be fixed seriously. Takes good legislation. I don't think we have that in front of us.
Wasn't it supposed to be just 2 weeks long, that emergency power thing? Am I mistaken?
Wow, you got a good memory. It's not only, listen, for 2 weeks we'll be past this, then you can take your mask off, or how about why don't you stay home, stay safe? Why don't you go outside? You can go on the water, but you can't fish. Johnny, have we not heard a lot of programs and I don't know, propagandas or new directions? We always have to have a new slang name, and yet it just shows really how little we've always not known.
Right.
And it's okay to admit that. It's okay to say that we went through this virus and we really don't know what we're doing, but unfortunately it was offered up as that we were, and I'll offer up that we weren't. We've had to learn to go through this together. So the COVID needs to transmission or to transform someday to a managed a managed health care issue and the emergency, we're going to have an exit plan and offer some hope to people, for crying out loud.
Right, right. And so your bill wasn't good enough, so they were like, oh, we'll do our own bill, and that'll be better, right? Is that the gist?
Well, you said it well. I'm not going to argue with those words. Again, the problem is the paper is the ink that's on that paper. There's no value to it. You cannot... the proposed bill to reel in governor emergency powers requires that you get all four corners of government to agree to end that that mandate or that power after so many days. And let me tell for your listeners, asking to get 100% of the vote, seriously, I would like every school district to know when you get to your bonds or the bond portion that you ask your voters to vote on to build you a new high school, you need a supermajority. But if we follow this path, you would need 100% of all voters to pass that school bond. And the way that the bill is written in Olympia for the emergency powers, it requires all four corners. You might as well go buy a lottery ticket. You'll win the lottery before you'll win the ear of the legislature.
And you know, I could have been mistaken about the 2 weeks. That's how long the emergency powers, you know, to flatten the curve and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I could have been misinformed, but people would say I was spreading misinformation and I was lying and blah, blah, blah. Now, he has this proposal about lying on elections. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, Governor Inslee is supporting Senate Bill 5843, and really this is a crime. It makes it a crime to lie about elections, and there's concern about, inciting violence and activities as such. And so this lying bill has been presented in committee. I heard that bill in committee. We have not moved it down a legislative road yet. And quite frankly, if I had a bigger brake pedal, you would see my foot slamming on this brake. And I tell you why. Lying is very much a moralistic issue. And I got to offer up to your listeners that my style is better to listen and to learn from people. That you, and hear what they have to say. And these are the people that you disagree with. You should not punish people that you disagree with. And quite frankly, I'm really only going to give your listeners one and only one good reason why this bill should go away. It is called the First Amendment. That is that one fight I have back to this. When you're trying to limit free speech and to control other speech, whether they're telling the truth or not, this is a constitutional issue now. I would never support this bill.
I would think that we would punish people who riot for 3 months long that, you know, destroy businesses and cities and stuff. But instead, I don't see how you could prove if someone was ill-informed as opposed to, you know, deliberately lying. But I'm pretty naive to a lot of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, we shouldn't be. Come on, we're Americans. Starting out with moms or dads, moms and dads. This is a moral thing. We're supposed to know the difference between right or wrong. We were told that to not lie. I mean, everybody knows this. From Pinocchio even knows this. There is something wrong about lying. And for us to think that somebody gets to write a bill and that will be cured, human part of a bad moralistic issue, that a trait that we have, it's funny, we've made it through so many elections, and obviously there's liars abound, and unfortunately a lot of those liars actually end up getting elected and somehow serving their constituents. But to regulate free speech, it's such an overreach. There's nothing in the First Amendment that says that you have to tell the truth. Your freedom of speech is that most talked about right that we have that truly separates us from the rest of the globe, of the planet.
So I have some text questions. Let's see. I have mobility issues. I realize that my community is lacking a quality ADA compliant areas throughout the community. When I ask the question, they have a hard time getting funding for that. It seems like it should be an automatic given from a higher power.
Well, all transportation-related projects, whether they're safe streets for bicyclists or enhanced mobility or access for those that have those challenges, from sidewalks to other barriers and stuff, this is an ongoing matter. And we fund these things routinely, and they come through, like you say, transportation projects or grants. And there's a lot of work left to be done, but a community, say in the Aberdeen area, needs a lot of access issues to be worked on, and that does include access for those with challenges. But even as a community-wide, you have a rail grade separation project that completely ties up the mobility of a community. When trains come to town, we've got congestion. So a good project that we need to focus there for everybody's mobility is that separation from that railroad grade crossing or crossings.
Right, right. What's your opinion on mail-in voting?
Well, mail-in voting is what Washington does. And I'm going to tell you, it has its problems. It truly does. But it comes with the one thing that I often tell people that may not like the mail-in voting is, please remember, you can be your own postmaster. When you receive that ballot, you don't have to, if you have any concerns about mailing it back or it getting lost or diverted or stolen. I always tell people what I sometimes do is I fill out my ballot that's mailed to me and I physically take it over and hand it in to the drop box of my choice or write it in auditors and election office. And mail-in voting is pretty much entrenched in Washington State, but there's many things we need to shore up on voter security and voter confidence. Recently, I've had a couple of bills to try to fix that and to improve voter confidence, and they were not moved on by the majority party.
You know, my opinion, and it's just my opinion, is that, you know, if our vote is as powerful and meaningful and, you know, the right that we're bestowed upon as Americans, that, you know, we should put at least a little work into casting that. And you know, of course, the people that aren't as mobile that, you know, would need something like the mail-in ballot, I would figure that, you know, of course, that they would utilize that. But for, you know, someone who can walk into a school and cast a vote, you know, cast their vote, you know, I owe at least that much to my community, to my country, to, you know, get up off the chair and go do it and, you know, be more of an active member of my community. But that's just my humble opinion. I got another question. Are you willing to compromise on to get emergency powers reforms through?
Well, absolutely. Compromise is actually the practicing solution that all legislators seek to get. And I really do. However, we're not at a compromisable point with the existing reform bill that's presented of Senate Bill 5909, and that's because I'll offer to you the breakdown of the bill. When we are not in session, I repeat, not in session, this bill requires that all four corners of the government agree to call that matter of emergency orders into question. And I've offered up to your listeners just moments ago, do you know what it takes to get 100% of all votes in order to pass something like a school bond? It can't be done.
Right.
When we're in session, there is no mechanism whatsoever for us to address emergency orders directly. It was offered up, well, we can do it from the floor when we're in session. Seriously, do you know the speed of government? How long will it take? Does it take for us to agree on something in session and then pass it, and when it becomes effect? This just takes more and more months off of the potential clock that we're trying to address an emergency. This is not an attack on the governor. The governor's ability to declare an emergency is paramount. It's incredibly important. You declare forest fires and unfortunate incidences that when you make that declaration, it opens our state up for federal funding. And these are good things. But to issue out mandates and directives like we've seen to fire people, or to really be restrictive without legislative review for 2 years, nobody else in the states does this. We were the cruelest state when we got to the point where we fired people for refusing to take what obviously the Supreme Court says is something you're not really able to force upon your employees unless that employer chooses it yourself.
Right.
So we got issues.
Yeah, no kidding. My body, my choice. Hey, it's 10 minutes till, and we have one more segment with Senator Jeff Wilson. If you have any questions, you can email or text Johnny at kbkw.com. And we have another email. How do we fix the problem of King County deciding our elections?
Well, King County is rewarded with the loudest voice because they have the highest and most people, let's say density, or I can use words like crammed into. Their voice is just like any other voice. We give them the power. We elect these people, our leaders, and we give them that powerful voice. And all I can say is the only way to change, if you don't like the direction we're going, and the only, and I repeat, the only, that's a four-letter word, get to the ballot box and cast your vote that you want to cast. I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote, but I'm going to tell people you better vote.
Right.
You need to vote. Do not let a November get past you. If you're upset in any way, shape, or form, or you're happy, please be that best Washington citizen you can and get up and vote.
Right, because if most people love the governor and everything he's doing, then they should go and vote for the governor when it's time for that election, or your city officials, or your county officials, or your state officials. If you like what they're doing, then vote for them. If you don't like what they're doing, then don't. But just do something, right?
Absolutely. Again, hey, let's remind everybody, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, the power is inherent from the people. It is the people, and you only get to practice that power. Your First Amendment and Second Amendment, all of that stuff will not matter unless you take the time to vote.
Well, you know, some people, speaking of the Constitution, some people are saying, oh, it's outdated, they didn't have Facebook then, or the internet, they don't know what it's like to live today because it's so much harder than it was back then. What say you?
Well, let's say you, those that say that, well, why don't you take yourself a time out and go sit on the sidelines for a while and let society pass you. We're all going to age, we're all going to get more mature, and we're all going to have the lessons learned. For to be so judgmental so quickly, I'm going to tell you the Constitution is certainly, certainly not perfected, but it's lasted a couple hundred plus years, and in fact, it still stands up for something that nobody else in this world has, and that is a democratic republic, a form of a constitution that we practice in politics. Nobody has what we have. And so the Constitution modernized, I'm going to say that is our DNA of our country. It's workable. It's livable. And it's amendable. But let's also give a round of applause for our existing Constitution for keeping this beautiful republic alive as long as it has.
I've had a couple people ask about this. They want to ask you about low-income housing folks putting in community service hours in for, you know, the help our government gives them with rent or whatever.
You mean the government to pay to volunteer, or I'm
the people,
can you repeat that question, please?
The people who are that would be getting low-income housing help from the government, having them put in some community service hours because they're kind of helping themselves get better by putting in like sweat equity into whatever program, since they're getting help.
You know, within reason, everybody can contribute what that they can contribute. Some can contribute, obviously, at different levels of me, of styles of participation. Any involvement in equity that's given by somebody that on that basis is good. I would support looking at a number of those ideas. It wouldn't be a one-size-fits-all, but you're right. There's nothing wrong with offering that and a two-way street. And I'll offer that there are programs where I hail from in Longview, Washington, where we have programs where the residents actually help build the housing that they're going to participate in. And these programs have been successful. This gives you some pride and some equity if you're able to do so.
What is your opinion of term limits for U.S. Congress?
Why would I have term limits for U.S. Congress? I should have term limits for all elected offices, from the Mosquito Control Board to all the way up to the President of the United States. I dropped a term limits bill as a freshman senator. I'll offer to your listeners that too was immediately derailed. But I have made that effort. I do support term limits. Usually my style is two terms, and you're not out. I'm just saying two terms in the same seat. You still want to be in government or serve? Great, then make a vertical or a horizontal move. But keeping in that same seat till the rest of your political life, nah, I think we need some term limits, and I'll stand by that.
You know, I heard that early on, you know, the average Joanne shop owner would you know, become an elected official and, you know, do her duty as an elected official and then put in her term or terms and then just go back to her shop and resume being that shop owner and then let someone else, you know, kind of take the helm in that position. But it seems like we kind of drifted away from that a little bit.
Well, Johnny, we shouldn't drift away from that a little bit. When you go to work in a capital, go to work for the people, you're supposed to bring this lived experience. Well, you got to have real experiences, and that means you need to work in the real world. And I'll offer to that, that's outside of the state senate. I do. I still even wash dishes at a local restaurant. I need to be attached and be connected to the other men and women and people that we represent. Whether it is washing dishes or running a company, you can be removed from a clear vision if you spend your entire life, say, in Olympia, in the Capitol. I think we need eye-openers, and it's kind of like as Wayne's World would say, you always want to live in the now, Garth.
Nice. Well, we're about out of time. We got less than a minute. Are there other bills or somewhere that a person can learn about other bills you might be working on that aren't as polarized, hot topics?
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a lot of common sense bills that mean so much to everyday everybody, which, let me tell you what, catalytic converters. I'm leading the charge. I have an awesome bill that I'm fighting for to bring some justice to slow down the pandemic crime of people helping themselves to everybody's catalytic converter, and that's progressing along. I also have got some great tow truck and safety bills to protect the men and women that work on the side of the roads, and I've even got some little housekeeping things, such as, well, how do you loan your antique muzzle loader to a museum for display?
Right.
So I'll make that possible. And how you get to is just go to the Washington State of Washington has a legislative website. Just you can just type in Washington State bills on a computer, and it'll populate this list. You can look up me, anybody else, people you like, people you don't like. You can find out what they're doing.
I appreciate you spending the time with us today. Aberdeen.